Rediscovering Self is a podcast that addresses the daily ramblings of the mind and talks about what influences the way we think and how we can cope in an ever-changing world. This podcast is brought to you by Amrutam, an Ayurvedic lifestyle brand and wellness community. Hey everyone! This is Preeti, your host at Rediscovering Self, and I'm wishing all of you a very, very happy new year. Wishing you a very happy 1st of Jan 2021. Can you believe 2020's gone past? Like yesterday was literally the last day of a very tumultuous year. And here we are, ready to make a fresh beginning, hoping for lots more coming our way. Lots of good stuff, hopefully. Let's keep our fingers crossed. And if you're listening to this podcast on the first day of a brand new year, congratulations. And I am so thrilled that you are focusing on your mental health today. I also feel like the topic that we're talking about today is going to be so relevant to listen to today or on this weekend, because I feel like maybe the last week of the last year has been like a chill period for a lot of us. I understand that not for everyone, but we can't deny that it's been quite festive. The general mood around the world has been quite relaxed, and we are all probably getting back to work with full force starting now. There's also pressure, there is stress of a brand new year, the pressure to perform really well, to, you know, achieve our targets and whatnot. And I do get that it can be quite overwhelming, which is why this episode is for you. If you're coming back from a break, you're probably returning to a landslide of emails and so much of work that needs to be done that it's causing you some amount of stress. If you've been working throughout, then you're probably facing the prospect of brand new targets, a lot of fresh work, and a lot on your plate. Either way, this episode tackles exactly that. The topic is, I stress a lot about pending work. And joining me to discuss this is Prateek Sharma. Prateek Sharma is a mental health activist and a psychologist with a master's degree in clinical psychology. His interests involve mental health, psychoanalysis, and its intersection with everyday experiences and social discourses. Hi Prateek, it is so nice to have you here to be talking about something that is so very relevant. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
It's great. It's really great to be here. And thank you so much for initiating, you know, taking such an initiative for talking about everyday experiences that connects to our mental health. It's really, really important.
Great. I really couldn't agree more that this is such a relevant thing to be talking about at this time. And I feel like even the topic that we're going to be discussing today has just increased in relevance ever since the pandemic began, because, you know, it does deal with everyday experiences. So I want to get right into it with you, because I know that there's a lot that you will have to share with us on this. And the thought that we're unpacking today is, I stress a lot about pending work. So it's been a hard time, especially when it comes to the whole work from home scenario. I feel like this is something that has become so increasingly relevant every single day. So I just want to hear from you on this. You know, what is the stress? How do we experience it? How does it manifest physically, mentally, emotionally?
See, we have to understand that that's the how we have outlined the topic, right? The stressing about pending work. Now, it encompasses a whole area of stress about working itself and stress being in the workplace. And I think it has suffered a significant change during the pandemic itself, because we have completely shifted from our usual workplaces to our homes. And with that, it has sort of also infiltrated into our personal lives, right? So because we are now just, we will just wake up, we are just in our pajamas and we have started working. So all these behaviors sort of have an impact on how we perceive work itself. But coming back to how we experience anxiety about pending work, right? So this is itself, as per me, it's a very deep phenomena to understand. Of course, we can understand it in two ways. So there are two kinds of awareness of anxiety in general, right? So there's an awareness in the body. So we have physiological elements to explain it. We feel restless. We feel sleep deprived when we are in bed. We are only thinking about what we have to do next or what lies ahead. We can experience palpitations, sweating. There is an awareness that oh my God, I'm so nervous right now. But we also have to understand this, that this lies on a continuum. So everybody experiences anxiety, right? Everybody experiences anxiety in regards with their work or in regards with other aspects of life, such as interpersonal relationships, other things, social and political things as well. The thing is that it lies on a continuum. So it, there is at one end, there's someone who's feeling very mild anxiety, very tolerable kind of anxiety or kind of stress, but it goes on to, it can, and it is vulnerable to go on to becoming what we can label as an anxiety disorder as well, which also has these all these elements as well. The other kind of awareness, so there are two kinds of awareness, right? There's a physiological awareness, but then there are psychological elements to it, constantly worrying about certain things, being very excessively apprehensive about something that lies in the future, something that we do not really know about, something, you know, we are just sort of anticipating. And how it connects to work is that we start worrying about our productivity, we start worrying about the work, for example, the topic, the work that remains pending, feeling guilty about not working, feeling guilty about resting, feeling perhaps feeling guilty about engaging in certain leisure activities that, you know, that were meant to be for ourselves, and so on and so forth. There is something else that also happens when we are talking about this awareness, which is that it also impacts on something that what we psychologists call our cognition. So in the sense that their anxiety about work or anxiety about any kind of aspect about our lives sort of narrows down our attention. So we only see ourselves existing into this frightening environment, and we sort of keep finding clues that will make this anxiety justified in itself. So I think that these are sort of certain signs, and, you know, physically and mentally as well, that we could, you know, look out for.
I think it's really interesting that you have mentioned both aspects, that, you know, stress isn't necessarily just mental. It's not just worrying about pending work, or it's not just worrying about what's going to happen, but it's also this whole manifestation in the form of feeling anxious about all of this. And that anxiety itself has such physical symptoms that come with it. So like you said, you know, it's physiological. It has a lot of different forms of impacts. And I feel like just knowing what these signs and symptoms are helps us understand what's going on in our head and in our body. Right? Like, in the sense that if I'm stressed, then where is my body storing it? It's clearly being stored somewhere. There's pain, there's palpitations. In a sense, it can be a little alarming because we may not realize that this is actually linked to the kind of stress that we're going through.
Absolutely. This is actually a very interesting point, because the whole point of anxiety, the whole, let's call it the whole purpose of feeling anxious, is to alarm ourselves. That's, there's something that in the future that we are not aware of yet. Because see, that's how we differentiate it from fear, right? There's a difference between having fear and having anxiety. Fear is a response to an actual event or something, a stimuli that lies outside, right? So when there's a bear in front of you, you are actually afraid because there is a bear. But anxiety, there is no actual event. Anxiety is about anticipation of something that you have no idea is going to occur or not. So which is why we feel, and of course, if we can feel it, like you said, we have it in our bodies, but we also have the meaning of what we're feeling in our bodies, right? So the meaning comes from how we think about it. And of course, it has a relationship with the environment outside.
Absolutely. And maybe just understanding that relationship a little bit more is the key to starting to get a little better, feel a little better about ourselves, and just unraveling what is happening. Because without that awareness, it's very easy to just slide into a rabbit hole of what one might consider stress, but might actually be something far deeper.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So this is where we talk about the relationship between what we are feeling and how it finds a place in the environment outside ourselves. So when I say outside ourselves, I mean the kind of culture that we are experiencing, the kind of social environment that we experience. And in this context, like, for example, the topic of this talk, which is the work culture.
Right. And I think you have written quite a bit about this, right, in multiple medium and avenues. So I want your thoughts on this, you know, like, especially in the work area, especially during this pandemic, where boundaries have really faded into oblivion and where stress has maybe taken over everything. Because like you said at the start of this conversation as well, we're available from the time we wake up to the time we go to bed. There's no concept of disconnecting. And there's always a concept of hustling. So you have written about the whole hustle culture, and I want to hear your thoughts on how this, you know, actually affects us and our lives.
See, this is a very interesting question and a very complicated question in itself. In the way that we are talking about where does this come from, right? We are now coming to a phase where we're talking about the roots of this stress or roots of this anxiety. So we have to ask ourselves, how did we come to be such anxious beings at our workplaces? What happened? So what happened was that we felt forced to pace our own existence and compromise sort of its nature to meet the demands of our work cultures, which ultimately caused distress. And there are several ways to look at it as well. So we can look at very immediate causes, like keeping a tight schedule. And this has also, you know, this has also a place in the pandemic that we have been living in. For example, our whole schedule seems to have changed a lot. Now we are meeting more excessive demands from our workplaces, and we are being forced to work way too much. And of course, not to mention that people's salaries are being cut as well. So, and of course, there are other things that we are not doing. We are not eating properly. We are unable to sleep properly. Our perception of time itself has completely changed, because now there are no, like, you know, how we go to work and come back. So there is a meaning to that. How do you go to work, and how do you drive back or come back using public transport from work? And then you spend your days, like you spend your weekends, and there's always this anticipation of weekends as well, which has also completely disappeared now. So these are immediate causes. But what I'm more interested in, that there are certain causes that lie underneath, which what we call as intrapsychic causes, or causes which are more towards the relationship which we have with our work culture, which comes to the fact that feeling anxious about pending work, feeling anxious about work in itself, is a very multifactorial sort of issue, in the way that a lot of aspects of our lives contribute to it. This is not just about work. This is about our place in the work culture. And this work culture is a product of many social and economical constraints, which is something which I have also talked about in the articles that I have written about. So, for example, and this is where I'm talking, by hustle culture, we also mean the culture that has been built by capitalism in general. So, which is what the capitalist culture has created, and a sort of illusion of productivity by falsely connecting it with happiness. So, if we are not working enough, if we are not forcing ourselves to work more as other people are, we sort of think that we don't really deserve to be content, or we don't really deserve to be, you know, as happy as other people are. And this is where, you know, our self-worth gets tied to it, because capitalist culture, it sort of demands that people remain in this cycle of constant growth through a strict emphasis on productivity through labor. And it is this labor that sort of puts us in this vicious cycle of anxiety. So, for example, I'm lying down. It's the end of the day. I've finished working, and I've done like considerable amount of work, which checks off all the list, that to-do list and everything that I have to do. But when I go to bed, when it's time for me to rest, it's time for my eyes to rest, it's time for perhaps to listen to some music, read a book or something, I'll constantly feel guilty in the background about something that I'm perhaps not done, which might not even exist, but it will still make me feel guilty. And I will feel that I'll say perhaps that I don't know where this is coming from. I don't really know why I'm feeling guilty. And this question, this why, is the very factor this whole work culture wants us to believe in. So it's the idea of growth, right, within this framework, which sort of spills into the free time narrative. And this happened during pandemic as well, because we were forced to live into our homes, and everybody else had so much, everybody had time on their hands, right? Because all organizations and offices had to shut down for some time. Now, everybody was still, you know, with this sort of void that they had to survive, and they wanted to fill this. Now everybody start posting stuff on social media that, you know, I have been cooking so much, and I have been having so much time to do these activities, and I have been having so much time to read and, you know, do my rearrange my room, rearrange my closets and everything. What it did was it turned the act of coping with a very, very horrifying pandemic into a vacation activity chart. And this impacted a lot of people who were not perhaps ready to, you know, deal with it. They were not ready to, they were like, okay, I'm maybe I just don't want to do anything. Maybe I just want to rest. Maybe I just want to, you know, be with myself for some time. But now, since there is already a competition outside, I will feel compelled to do these things. And I talked to a lot of people who were feeling these things, which I have perhaps quoted in these articles as well.
Personally speaking, I feel like I have swung to both ends of the spectrum. You know, like there was this massive lull at one point where I felt like I literally cannot move or do anything because everything around me is very, very overwhelming. And then there was the other part of me that was like, you know what? Your work is remote. Why is this any different? Do more. So it's such a war, right? Like when you're fighting between what's going on in your body and mind, and when you're also fighting, you know, with the outside world being super productive and you just constantly feeling like you're not doing enough. So that's one part of it, I suppose, you know, like it's like coping had become so hard. And at the same time, you had to do it. So that does, like you said, you know, really trigger a certain level of anxiety in a person, or it can really be very, very difficult to manage. And especially when you see others hustling, right? I feel like even social media kind of plays that role when you're constantly looking at someone else, quote unquote, hustling, and you feel that pressure to actually do the same. So I'm sure that has also been a contributor. Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is when we look at other people, it is when we look at our environment outside, we sort of want to identify with it. And this is perhaps a very natural aspect of being human. But the thing is, where is this hustle coming from? That is the question that we need to be asking about, right? So where is see, hustle culture is a badge of honor, let me tell you. Like it's a badge of honor that people very proudly wear in workplaces, even with or without a pandemic. I mean, if you even talk about pre-COVID times or post-COVID times, we will see this happening. And we know that ability to work hard, multitask, you know, lead multiple teams at one time, take as many challenges as you want. These are key strengths on all kinds of resumes, right? But what they do is, concomitantly, is that they allow a certain kind of shaming. Since these are certain kind of key strengths, right? And they are all over the place and they are sort of idealized in the in our work cultures. What ends up is they also allow, or I mean to say, they also permit a certain kind of shaming of people who are not able to meet these labels who are not able to meet these sort of key strengths. They may be equally efficient as others. Someone who is perhaps a slow worker doesn't mean they're not, a good worker, or someone who is not able to produce as quickly as others does not mean they're not producing a very commendable sort of work. But the is we have sort of internalized these kind of beliefs about ourselves, like internalized this exploitation, you know, that nobody's really talking about. Like, we know about this. This is not something that is very new to us. Like, of course, you are being forced into labor and your working hours are increasing, your personal time is sort of decreasing. Everybody knows this, but nobody's really saying that, oh my God, this needs to stop. Because it has so many long-term implications on mental health. We are perhaps in India, we know this by research, that in India we are experiencing a lot of burnout amongst employees, no matter what workplace we talk about. Even in mental health workplaces, like my own dissertation in my master's degree was about how psychotherapists themselves are experiencing burnout. And it has also to do with a lot to do with what we are talking about here.
Yeah, I can imagine. I suppose this time must have been even more trying for all of you, right? Even in your line of work, and to deal with the culture of hustle itself. I can't even imagine like what route that must have gone down. So I'm sure it must have been really hard. I want to pick up on something that you mentioned over here. So there are two parts to it, right? So there are the people who don't really align with the term hustle. I'm one of them. I don't believe in a hustle culture, which is so toxic that it glorifies lack of sleep, that it glorifies working through the night and working weekends and not taking holidays. I don't believe these are badges of honor. I feel like they are just a roadmap to a burnout. And then there are those who believe in the hustle culture, who really truly enjoy it, or maybe, you know, that is the truth that they know. So I have begun to understand in some way how, you know, this is really difficult for those who don't align with hustle, because that is a universal truth. Does it impact people who are hustling as well? Because I just want to understand where that comes from, whether there's a stress level aligned with that as well, and how different it is for those who do believe in hashtag hustle and hashtag align.
Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely true that there are always these two kinds of polarizations of experience of hustle culture. There are people who do not really like to identify, but then there are also those who are, you know, and I think a majority of those who are actually kind of, you know, yielding into this hustle culture. I think both have to, both play an equally important role in understanding the kind of thing that we are talking about today. The reason being that, see, again, I will say this because it's all on a continuum, right? There are people who might not really relate to it. And perhaps it is also, which is very important to mention, that it also depends on the workplace and how the structure of the workplace itself comes into play. Because, I'll give you a very good example of this, Starbucks, right? It was all over the news when Starbucks, introduced certain kinds of meditation apps to its employees. Like, you know, we'll give you subscription to these apps, which will help you feel calm, meditate, and do certain activities to, keep yourself content. The response, which was applauded a lot by the employees, was that, why don't you just pay us, more, rather than giving us this subscription to these apps. So it depends on the workplace itself and how that workplace takes care of their employees. Now, it's a very sort of far-fetched idea to understand, look at that, workplace needs to look beyond these symptoms and signs of anxiety and actually need to take care of their people, actually need to create a kind of environment where the employees feel that, I'm being looked at beyond how much I can produce for the workplace. And I think this, perhaps, I'm sure it's your workplace as well, which has already taken care of these things. But it is also very rare to find these things outside. And I have spoken to few people, very, very few people, you being one now, that who have sort of talked about how their own way of experiencing this hustle culture does not really meet the what lies in the majority. And somehow I attribute it to the kind of workplace that they are in. If that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. I feel like while workplaces, especially in India, have started talking about mental health, there might be a long way to go in terms of actual implementation and to kind of cater to the needs of different styles of working and different styles of employees. I feel like it is a challenge that maybe, I think it's going to be a slow process. I think it's going to be a very slow process because, one can have, like you said, apps downloaded onto phones. One can have meditation sessions organized by the corporate. But at the end of the day, it is the work culture itself, right, that needs to change. And a lot of it is top down.
Absolutely. These are two kinds of aspects that we look at when we talk about, what do we do about this, right? So what do we do about this? That we can do things on the surface for ourselves, right? But I believe that there is also a kind of self-reflection that is collectively needed. And by self-reflection, I mean, this is something that I or any kind of professional can't really tell. I can't put on, guidelines, this is how you do self-reflection, because self-reflection is very individual in its criteria. What we need to be thinking about is that how the current work culture plays with our appetite for things. So this is where I'm talking about capitalism. It instills in us the idea that we are not enough until we do more and want more. So it's like this is what happened in the pandemic itself. Like, if I'm not using my phone all the time, if I just keep in my phone and I sit for a while, it will just hit me. It will, that whole experience of that void will just hit me, that what do I do with myself now? So and then I'll have to pick my phone again to buffer against it. So rather than thinking and rather than depending on these things, we'll need to be able to think about what else we can do instead of just keep getting stuck in the cycle of doing more, because then we sort of tie our self-worth to it, right? Because
exactly. That was actually going to be what I wanted to really dive into, like, because working has become a life. Like, there's no work life. Like, it's become like work is life. So how does one stop our self-worth from getting tied to that? Because I feel like that has already happened. Because even in your own example, you said you're like constantly itching for your phone. Some time away from it results in guilt. So what are the few things that maybe one can do to stop that from happening? Self-reflection is definitely one, but you know, just a few steps for those of us who really need this help at this time, if there's anything you could advise.
Mm-hmm. So I like to work with the language that we use when we describe doing things and when we describe ourselves while doing things. Like, so for example, rather than when you are sitting down with a task, you kind of can ask yourself that, do I choose to do this or do I have to do this? There's certain kind of subtle differences that you can create yourself in the language, in the voice, in our, you know, in our minds, right? When we're thinking that, how am I seeing myself in this place? And if I'm, for example, of course, there are things that you need to schedule your personal time properly. You need to schedule things properly. You need to schedule your work in place, perhaps keep your workstation at a different place than where your bedroom is, so you should not be working sitting on the bed itself, so you can come back to sleep. These are certain behavioral elements that one can do. But what I'm really interested in, because I'm interested in the long-term effect of this, is that
right.
is what we are talking about, self-reflection, that when you perhaps try to just lie down for doing absolutely nothing, that itself has a lot of nourishment to our own personality or our own way of thinking and feeling. So there is a certain, I like to like quote a psychoanalyst who has written this paper, and the paper is titled as lying fallow. Lying fallow is perhaps an activity, you know, it's like an activity where you just sit down, whatever you want to do. You would just sit down and be still, do nothing. But it can be presence of someone else as well. So, for example, you are sitting down in your balcony and you can see your neighbor across. And they're also sitting down. You don't really talk to each other. You don't, but in your peripheral view, you're having the acknowledgement that someone else is also there. And you're just sitting with your thoughts. You don't have to think. You don't have to, you know, put on some music or meditate or something. You're just sitting down doing absolutely nothing. Now, that itself has a lot of capacity to nourish ourselves. It has a lot of capacity to perhaps help us fight, you know, this kind of guilt that we are experiencing and distance away. You know, distancing is a very, very, one of the very important tools, if one can speak of them. Is a way that when you distance from all this exhaustion, all this, you know, constantly cathecting against your work and your whatever you're doing, doesn't have to just be your work, doesn't have to just be your job. Even if it's something like if you are perhaps a social media influencer, if you constantly post, even that needs to be put under check, right? So, but to be feeling guilty for not doing them is something that needs to be worked upon. So we should be able to think about, why is it that I'm feeling guilty? And when you ask yourself these questions, you'll already start to think about certain answers. And this is an insight. Like this is like, for example, whatever we have talked about today is a certain kind of insight in itself, that, you know, maybe this is all not really me. Maybe this is all. So we try to get ourselves out of the cycle of self-blame, and which is perhaps the most important thing to do while fighting anxiety related to work. Because we attribute everything to ourselves. We attribute everything to, oh my God, maybe I'm not enough. Maybe I'm not really working that much. Or maybe I'm not good at this work that I'm doing, so I should do more. This is a thing that we need to fight. And I think this can be fought in a long term itself. Of course, we can do other things that I've mentioned, but this comes from reading about certain experiences of other people, of thinking about ourselves and our place in the work culture.
Lots to think about over there. And I think the one point that you really got me on was, you know, why do we feel guilty?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then I feel like the points that you mentioned after that, you know, that I might fail, that I might not be good enough, that I may not be doing enough or doing as much as others. I feel like there are so many answers over there that could be so different for each of us. Like my answers could be completely different from yours. But ultimately, it is that emotion, right? Guilt, which is what really needs to be unpacked, which is what really needs to be worked on, because that's where those answers lie. And it's not something that, you know, you or I can unpack for everyone else. So it's really very, very personal. How does one start on that process? You know, I know therapy is definitely an option, and that is something that I have gone on to recommend to a lot of people. It's something that has helped me as well. But for those of us who don't have access to therapy, are there any resources that you could maybe recommend that can be referred to?
Of course. A lot of people have written about these things. A lot of people have spoken, like, for example, what we are doing today. A lot of people have spoken as well. So there are a lot of people who have talked about this connection between work, mental health, but away from its all its pathology that we usually discuss.
That would definitely help. And what I'll do is I will link it in the description box of this podcast episode itself, so that for anybody who needs that as a reference, they can have an easy reference in hand. I feel like it is so two-pronged, and at the same time, you know, like, while we do reflect on our own self and try to understand how our behavior is currently impacting our life, I feel like it is so important to take into account the kind of environment that has enabled that. Right from, say, childhood to our schooling, to our early days at work, to now in a pandemic, it all really forms an entire ecosystem that has to be looked at holistically, because ultimately all of that is impacting our behavior. So it is so important to actually deal with each aspect of this, because it can't be one without the other, right? Like, we can't take the blame completely on ourselves that we are the ones who are incapable of taking care of stress, when the environment itself is really propagating a stressful setup. And we can't always blame the environment, because ultimately it's our reaction also to it that needs to be unpacked. So lots to learn right over there. And I feel like this whole conversation has, I suppose it is a step to really sensitizing or talking about hustle and about stress in life and how it may lead to anxiety. So, like, for me, this has been very, very eye-opening, Pratik.
Thank you so much. And you are very right at pointing out that how it can never be one thing. So it is the nature of any kind of mental health experience, be it mental health or mental ill health as well, that nothing, it's the truth of the science of psychology, psychiatry, or whatever, that nothing can be attributed to just one set of cause, because everything is interdisciplinary in nature, be it stress, be it anxiety, depression, be it suicide, or any kind of even trauma as well. Even trauma is deeply, deeply multifactorial in nature. And one other thing that you just pointed out is very correct, that it's also about how we respond to it. See, because we are meaning-making individuals in general, right? We can't just stay at one place and then experience everything. We make our own meanings, which are very subjective and very individual in nature. Which is also why it's really hard to pinpoint on what needs to be done, because everything will come from which will sing to one's life story as well. So everybody's life story is different, and everybody's identities are so different. So if someone who is perhaps not so not so privileged as us, living in a socioeconomic environment, will have a completely different experience of this hustle culture.
Absolutely. You can never really, there's no blanket. Like, it's always different. It's always going to be different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So lots to think about. Honestly, I feel like there's a lot in this episode that can be taken away, and a lot to actually start working on. So maybe, you know, processing is something that we can all start with, like you said, self-reflection. And then, of course, you know, like, a lot of reading material, resources that we'll be linking in this podcast episode itself. And of course, there's always therapy for those of us who really feel like we need help. I'm one of those. I have chronic anxiety, and I've been in therapy, and I can attest for the fact that it's changed my life. So I would definitely recommend it to a lot of people, to everyone out there. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining me here, Pratik. Thank you so much for taking out the time to discuss this. And I know for a fact that there's a lot to take away, and I'm sure it's going to be helpful to a lot of people.
Thank you so much. This is actually the kind of conversation I really wanted to have, because there are a lot of conversations about anxiety in general, which remain very narrow, because they talk about things. Okay, well, these are the signs and symptoms. What we need to do about these is, rather let's have a conversation which are very holistic in nature.
Absolutely, and I think that's a very, very valuable note to end on. And I really hope that people take that up and start taking baby steps towards getting better. And I'm sure that, you know, this episode has actually gone a long way to convincing someone to maybe seek help or just start introspecting. So once again, thanks a lot, Pratik. I can't wait for people to hear this episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Great. And that's a wrap on this one. Feel free to check out the description box for links to the work that Pratik has mentioned. Feel free to check out what he does. Instagram handle, social media is all right there. And as always, we would love to hear from you. So whatever thoughts and feedback you have, feel free to share it with us at either Amritam Official's Instagram handle or my Instagram handle at Peppy Travel Girl. This is Preeti signing off now. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next week. And the thought that we're discussing next week is, I lose my temper a lot and hate when things don't go my way. So stay tuned. Until then, stay safe. Take care. Bye-bye. Rediscovering Self is a podcast that addresses the daily ramblings of the mind and talks about what influences the way we think and how we can cope in an ever-changing world. This podcast is brought to you by Amritam, an Ayurvedic lifestyle brand and wellness community.